You're listening to episode 122 of the Mad Chatters Podcast, January 25th, 2017.
Most everyone's mad here.
Hello there, and welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters Podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney Universe. My name's Derek, and joining me today on this podcast are my co-hosts, Matthew.
I am thrilled to be on this show.
And Jeremy.
I'm the guy who gets way too excited when there's a Disney category on Jeopardy.
Aren't we all? Okay, well, our regular listeners of this show will know that we like to talk about food. So with that being said, we're going to kick off this episode with a round of eating around the world. Eating Around the World is a segment where we focus on a particular restaurant at Walt Disney World that we personally have enjoyed or not enjoyed. And we give a brief review. This week, we're going to be focusing on a restaurant that Matt and I have both been to, but for different meals. We're talking about Captain's Grill, which is the table service restaurant at Disney's Yacht Club Resort. I had breakfast there recently, and Matt, I always remember this place because a while back you had a blog where you listed your five favorite table service restaurants in Walt Disney World, and this was, I don't remember what number, but this was somewhere on that list, and that was actually the first time it was even on my radar.
It was number five. We had been there in 2010, if I'm not incorrect. I started making that list in 2011 or 12 or something like that, but it was just one of those places that's off the beaten path. You know, it's over there in the yacht, it was in the Yacht Club, right?
Yeah.
Okay. In the Yacht Club over behind Epcot with the Boardwalk and Beach Club. They're all over there together. And it's just one of those places that we were going with my parents, and I saw it on the list. I was like, I've never been there before, and it looks interesting. So let's just go try it out. And it's one of those places that it's not going to blow you away, but it's charming. That's a wonderful word we use a lot. It's charming. It's secluded. It's quiet. And it's in a beautiful resort. And the food is great. I mean, don't get me wrong. I said it's not going to blow you away. It's really, really good. It's more about the experience for me, though. I don't know if that was your takeaway from breakfast or not.
I don't know. The food was pretty great. I'm not going to lie.
Usually these places are like that. Like breakfast, I don't know anybody that doesn't like breakfast somewhere at Walt Disney World.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't ever hear bad reviews about breakfast.
No, and Disney does a good job of trying to add some sort of unique item at each place, so it's not overall the exact same meal, you know?
What's unique about their breakfast?
Okay, well, let me go ahead and give the breakfast review then. That makes sense as a starting place. So Aaron and I went there back early December when we did the Candlelight Processional package, which means I can't really tell you exactly how much the buffet costs. But I think we paid like $31 for the package, so the buffet can't be much more than $23, $24. And I'm pretty sure your annual pass holder discount applies. So a very reasonable price for a Disney buffet. The buffet is not huge, but when you're looking at it, it's not very big. But then once you get to it, it actually has a lot more than you would expect. And like you said, it's just a charming little restaurant. They had their Christmas decorations up, and they were really, really cool. But when you walk in, they've got like the little bookshelf. Of course, it's nautical themed. They put us at a cool table where the whole wall, it's hard to explain, but it was like a moving mural, kind of. You know those games at like amusement parks where you squirt the water and the boat moves closer and closer to the finish line? That's kind of what it looked like. Like there were fake, it was like a 3D diorama with like fake waves in layers,
uh-huh.
And in between one of those layers was a giant yacht, and it was going from one end of the room all the way to the other behind this glass wall.
Oh.
Yeah, it sounds kitschy, tacky. Yeah, it sounds tacky, but it wasn't. Like, it fit the theme.
No, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Charming.
But anyway, to the food. So I think the unique item at this place was probably the frittatas they had. They had like 3 or 4 different varieties of frittatas. They had like a chef special and then one with like tomato and spinach and then one with sausage. And I think I tried 2 of the 4 and both were really good and just kind of unique. They had little almost like flatbread pizza things, but they were breakfast. So they had, you know, sausage and egg and stuff like that. They had French toast and pancakes, of course, and Mickey waffles. But beside all that stuff, they had a toppings bar. So there were sprinkles and M&Ms and brown sugar and cranberries and stuff like that to put on your sweets. I remember the bread pudding was really good because beside it, they had bananas Foster caramel sauce, just like you get at Ohana. Delicious. They, of course, had fruit and cereal. I mean, really everything you would expect to be on a breakfast buffet was there. They had sausage and gravy, or excuse me, biscuits and gravy. I remember the gravy was really good. Yeah, we just, I don't think there was anything that we ate that we didn't really enjoy. And for that price, and like you said, the location, like we were able to park there in the morning. And what they told us was, if you're eating here, you know, there's a 2-hour limit to park for free, or you can go valet and park here all day. Well, the valet was $25.
Ooh.
And we were like, okay, we're not doing that. And the more we thought about it, I'm like, how are they going to know that we've been parked here? Like, I really doubt they check if you've been parked there. So judge me if you would like, because we did technically break the rules. But we parked there in the morning, ate at Captain's Grill, we walked to World Showcase and just spent the day at Epcot and came back that night, no problems whatsoever. So like you said, the location, it's such a beautiful hotel, beautiful area, all those Epcot resorts. Walk around the boardwalk and enjoy a nice breakfast to start your day. Highly recommend.
Yeah, never been there for breakfast, but like I said, everyone seems to have a good breakfast review for everything. So you can't go wrong with breakfast, especially if it's a buffet.
Well, and I should say, you can order a la carte. They had a menu there with lots of different drinks and food items as well, so.
Well, the first time I went there was in 2010, and it was for dinner. And we were with my parents. My dad and I both got the New York strip. And my mom got a pork chop, I think. Jessica, my wife Jessica, she got, I don't really know what was her deal. She wasn't really hungry that night or something. And she got this, the chef special, which was like a seafood, good Lord, why is the word leaving me? Seafood risotto. And so, actually, that was an Asian risotto, which sounded weird to me. Because risotto, it's rice, arborio rice, but it's like creamy and soupy and kind of sticky. And it was Asian themed. I was like, why would they, you know, fried rice is very, I don't know. She didn't really care for it that much. But I loved my New York strip. Like, being at the Captain's Grill, it wasn't Le Cellier. It wasn't, you know, like a uppity steakhouse, a Yachtsman or anything, which is right next door. It was Captain's Grill. And I was like, well, we'll see how it is. And it was really one of the better steaks I've had on Walt Disney World property. Like, it was delicious and juicy. And I don't remember anything about the sides. They do bring out some bread.
Oh, do you think that possibly because of them being right next door, it might have came from the same kitchen?
Well, it does. That's one of the things that they throw around. I don't know. I mean, I guess the Yachtsman uses obviously probably better cuts of steak and maybe probably a different chef. But I don't know. There's some conflicting things online as to who cooks them. If it's the same chef, it's like some, you know, line cooks that are cooking the steaks for this. And I don't know. But yeah, it's the same kitchen. Anyway, it was really good. Actually, the last time we went, it was just last year, and my wife and I went by ourselves just to get away for the evening. And again, it's a wonderful place. You can snag a reservation at, you know, late into the day, even into dinner time. You can always find a place to eat there. It's wonderful. That night, we did that, just snagged a reservation in the afternoon, decided to go up. Jessica got, I think she got the pork chops this time and really, really enjoyed them. They came with some kind of like curried vegetable, roasted vegetables or something. I got the lamb chops, which I've always wanted to try at a Disney restaurant. And lamb chops, I was nervous because they're expensive and typically they're kind of small. But the portion size was wonderful. And they were cooked perfectly. I mean, just grilled, so it had that nice smoky taste to it. I think mine came with some roasted parsnips and turnips and things, which sounded, you know, okay to me, but everything on the plate was delicious. And they give you bread, you know, like most of the restaurants do. And I think it was like an assortment of like sourdough, pumpernickel, and something else. And then they most of the restaurants give you a little square of butter with like the Himalayan sea salt on it. Man, I could just, of course, I'm a sucker for bread anyway, but I could just eat and eat the bread. But we've had wonderful experiences both times. And like I said, it's in the Yacht Club. It has not been renovated, I don't think, or like changed decor-wise since the 90s. So it's really got a wonderful, I don't want to say retro about the 90s. Well, I will. Retro, just the colors they use, you know, navy and like burgundy and hunter green. It, you know, it speaks like the bedroom from Home Alone.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, this is not a 90s feel. You grew up in the 90s, you know the feel. It's got that. It hasn't been changed or overhauled or you know, made into some minimalist hipster junk hole. It's still got that little 90s charm to it, and I think that's one of the reasons I like it so much.
Yeah, for sure. I'd been wanting to try it ever since you mentioned it, and I'm glad I went. Now, I still haven't had dinner there, which I would love to try. But breakfast sure gave me reason to come back. So I think we'd both recommend it.
Buzz, absolutely. Your girlfriend, woof.
Woof. When I'm trying to describe like 90s, like what I'm talking about with like colors, like, oh, this is really 90s. And people are like, what? I'm like, Home Alone, bedroom. I'm like, yeah.
Oh, you said Home Alone. I was picturing the boys' bedroom in Home Improvement.
Oh, well, that too.
I was like, yeah, it really does kind of remind me of that.
All the above.
Yes.
That applies too.
So for some 90s goodness and some wonderful steak, head to Captain's Grill.
Yeah.
Oh? I'm glad I can contribute those two things to that conversation.
Yes. Best girlfriend.
That's great.
Thanks for the new lighting package on Space Mountain. Although it is 40 years late, it's a much needed improvement on the stark white lighting that illumined it before. The deep blue, red, and green hues are a much needed change from the football stadium white. Now the outside is just as beautiful and mysterious as the inside, at least at night.
Dear fake miniature hot air balloons in Epcot, thanks for welcoming me so warmly to the Land Pavilion every time I enter. Your pretty depictions of summer, winter, spring, and fall remind me that some things in life, much like the seasons, change, and that other things, like Future World, never really change at all. I love you, Derek.
Thank you, Liberty Square, for showing us that crude medieval torture devices can also be fun family photo stops.
Thank you, Disney, for background music. That subtle, often underappreciated part of the parks and resorts adds that little touch of immersive magic that's so hard to put your finger on, yet makes all the difference in the world. From the steel guitars of the Sunshine Tree, to the jungle drums of Africa, to the mechanical grooves of Tomorrowland, you whisk our ears away on countless adventures and immerse us in the heart of every story. Thank you.
Dear flute-playing pirate in Pirates of the Caribbean, the way you so casually and beautifully play your instrument while your comrades perform water torture on an innocent villager reminds me that I can be the positive force in the world around me and bring a bit of joy to any situation. Thank you for giving me life goals.
thank you, ostriches on Kilimanjaro Safari. Your dedication to laying your three eggs in the exact same spot every day for the last 19 years is commendable. We salute you, big ugly bird.
Thank you, Disney, for park-themed mugs. I enjoy the Starbucks You Are Here series, but there's just something about drinking my coffee out of my Splash Mountain It's a Zippity-Doo-Dah-Day mug that assures me that it's going to be a good day. My afternoon tea sipped from my Orange Bird mug really does cause me, as the cup says, to think orange thoughts. I don't know what that means, but it's happy.
Dear All-Star Movies, thank you for being a Disney resort that actually understands what kind of sports nods Disney fans actually want to see. We don't want generic, oversized tennis rackets, football helmets, or referee whistles shoved in our faces. All we really want are a few nods to one of the great live-action films of our time, The Mighty Ducks. That's what you gave us, and to that I simply say quack, quack, quack.
Here on the Match Hatters, we have a recurring segment called Did That Really Just Happen? In which we usually see something in the park that a fellow guest has done or a cast member that we just can't believe happened in that moment. But there's also things that happen in the park that we can't believe made it all the way from the drawing board to final completion. And these are things that we're like, what were they thinking? So tonight we want to talk about a few of those things. Now, we've mentioned some of them in the past repeatedly, so we're just going to state some obvious ones at first. Things like the Canadian Lumberjacks. What were they thinking bringing Canadian Lumberjacks in? And thought it was entertaining?
Fair show. I mean, literally.
Yeah, I think that's why they left, is they had to get back on the tour, the circuit.
That's right. They had to get back on the road with the dollar hollering. Not even Canadian, like Missouri? Montana? Some M state they came from.
Yeah, when I think Disney fans, Disney park goers, I think like masculine woodcutting lumberjacks. Like, those two just go together so well. Oh, man. I don't know. And they replaced... I mean, I wasn't a huge off-kilter fan, but off-kilter had a huge fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that's what replaced them.
Yeah, and then also other things like the cabanas, which were available in Tomorrowland. We still don't understand how that was a good idea.
Can we just break those, remind people what those are? They're tents.
They are white tents for $650, placed right smack dab in the middle of a land in the most visited theme park in the entire world.
They're down to 500, right? Jeremy said they're down to 500.
Yeah, it's like a clearance sale before they go away.
Everything must go.
Must go.
And they are. February 17th. That's the official last day.
Yes, yes.
You know, for some people... Oh. We need to stop this. Yes. I was going to say, for some people with the recent changes in our country, the future does look like a tent world. So, you know.
A tent world. I was going to say, some people were waiting on January 20th. I'm waiting on February 17th.
Yes, we can. Okay, so I think we all have some personal pet peeves as well that we just don't understand how they got into a Walt Disney World park or area, or just a bad idea overall. And so I'll start. Mine is the seats on Splash Mountain. As you know, Splash Mountain is my favorite attraction in the Magic Kingdom. I rave about this attraction every opportunity I get because it is the perfect blend of thrill and story and audio animatronics and music and everything. But I just don't understand how since 1992, which is when the attraction opened, we still are using subpar pieces of equipment. For example, when you get into a Splash Mountain log, who didn't think that it was a good idea to put a little step down where you don't have to put your foot directly onto the seat? Everybody does it. Getting in and getting out. The last thing I want is to sit on somebody's wet, nasty footprint. And then they kind of scoff at you when you take a minute to wipe it off. Like, no, I'm wearing white shorts. I don't need this. That's Matt saying that.
Maybe, I was going to say, maybe the reason they're scoffing at you is because you wore white shorts to Walt Disney World.
Yes, that's correct.
Before Labor Day. Anyways, and then, I don't know, next time you ride Splash Mountain, here's the test. I want every listener to do this, and then tweet me and tell me I'm wrong, if I'm wrong, but I'm not. When you ride Splash, put your hands on the little handrail that's provided for you right in front of your seat, and then just remove your hands, stick them up to your face, and give a big just and tell me what it smells like. Because
I'm gonna tell you what I think it smells like.
Tell me.
It smells like, I mean, it's like feet. It's body odor.
It is vile body odor, sweaty.
I mean, it's just mildew. It's just terrible mildew and people's hand sweat and stuff just sticking on those porous.
Exactly. Why do we have this kind of stuff on there still? This kind of stuff should have been removed. It is 2017. There's no excuse. We can have better safety protection things that don't make us want to vomit.
Okay, you made a really great case for that, but I'm going to be honest. So we were coming up with our list of 10, what were they thinking moments, and these were the ones that we were kind of like, okay, well, you feel that way, but I don't know if everyone does. And that was the one where I was like, okay, explain the Splash Mountain logs. What's wrong with those? But okay, I'm with you now. I'm with you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm pretty persuasive.
So mine that I listed, and then later I was like, you know what? That might just be me. I think there are lots of places in Walt Disney World that are unnecessarily just like out in the heat. And the one I first thought of was the Little Mermaid queue, which is gorgeous. Do not get me wrong. They did such a spectacular job with the details and the waterfalls and the little rope bridges and everything. But it is all right out in the sun with asphalt under your feet. And before you get inside, it's hell. Like, it's so hot out there. And like, I'm just miserable. I'm like, do not touch me. Don't talk to me. Just let me get into the air conditioning, please. And there's stuff like that. Like, Jeremy, you also mentioned the bus stops at the All-Star Resort specifically.
Oh, it's miserable. Like, why would you not put a covering over that? I'll tell you what, they can recycle the cabana tents into like an awning to hang over those. They're just, you're right out there exposed. And then the thing about it is, like, you want to stand in line because you want to make sure the bus driver sees that you want to go to that park or whatever. But then you're also like, no, I need to stand in the shade because I'm going to have a heat stroke out here, you know?
Yeah. Every time a bus pulls around, like, you sprint out from under the shade. Like, is it ours? Is it ours?
Another ill-themed area in the sun is the Tomorrowland stage. I don't know if you guys remember when they built this stage. It was built specifically for a Stitch-themed Tomorrowland show. Like, what was it called? Do you remember, Matt? Stitch's Supersonic something?
Supersonic Celebration, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And that show literally lasted like 3 weeks. And the reason why was because it ran three times a day in the mid-afternoon. And it was smoking hot. And people were not going to sit out there and die.
Watch a Stitch show.
So, you know, why they didn't put some awning on top of that or, you know, something, it's ridiculous.
Well, I think that stage in general is kind of a what were they thinking moment because they have not put out one single good show. I think some people ironically like the Christmas show that's there, but there's no need for that thing to take up space. But anyway, yeah, mostly because of the heat. You're right.
I've expressed my dissatisfaction with this before, so I'll just give it a moment of my time. And that is the queue at Toy Story Midway Mania. I really enjoy the attraction. I do. It's one of, well, I wouldn't say it's one of my favorites, but it's up there pretty high on things I do enjoy doing and enjoy. Let me say this. I love the loading zone, although there are even some things about that that are like, that they took the easy way out. But the queue for that attraction is just so ill thought through. Like, where are we? You know, once you get to the loading zone, you're quote unquote in Andy's bedroom. He's got the Midway toy set opened, and he's made a little station out of the Tinker toy thing, and you know, all that kind of makes sense. It kind of comes together, but the queue is just like an endless hodgepodge of retro board game things, and there's things on the ceiling like Chutes and Ladders board, and but for the most part, it's just a giant nondescript room with like linoleum, like old school asbestos tile, it feels like, and drop ceiling.
Yeah.
And all around you is like, oh, it's a giant crayon. And they're relying so much on just sensationalism in here. It's irritating. It all it is, the only joy that people draw from it is, ooh, there's a viewfinder. I had one of those. You don't know what that is. And there's a Crayola crayon. I remember we used to have whole sets of crayons. That's all it is all the way through. If you're behind or in front of older people, you know, God help you, because that's going to be the entire queue for you. But that, it's just, look at pictures of it. It's just so thrown together, like just squeeze crap wherever you can. But it's not thought through. There's no story. Where are we? What are we doing? I just don't, it's lost to me. I hate that queue more than probably any other.
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you recently that I was in there, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to get some good shots while I'm in here, because you can wait in there for a while. I was like, there's nothing I want to take a picture of. Like, all of this looks cheap, and you can't take a picture without people being in the background, because you're all so tightly squeezed in there. I think they were relying on the Mr. Potato Head to make you, like, forget everything else in the room, but now even he's gone.
Yeah, I think that's terrible. And seeing pictures of that third wing, I've made this statement before too. It looks terrible. The way you get there, the little
it's just a entrance. Hallway. Yeah, it's a long hallway.
It's like, what in the world? What are you? What were they thinking?
Brings it all back around. Well, right. That being said, we now have compiled a top 10 list of what were they thinking moments. So I'm going to start with number one. What were they thinking when it comes to the ill-fitting attractions in Tomorrowland? Lately, Tomorrowland just feels like it's just been getting the shaft repeatedly over some things of ill-fitting ideas and concepts, but none go as bad as Stitch's Great Escape and Monsters Inc. Laugh Floor. That being said, you have something like Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin, which some people don't like because it is an IP that is in Tomorrowland. All right, it's a Pixar-related attraction. I don't have a problem with that because Buzz Lightyear is very futuristic in his concept and in his ideas and themes.
Right.
Even Stitch. I can argue and vouch for Stitch a little bit because there is sort of this alien-esque, futuristic idea when it comes to Stitch. Do I think it works well there? No, but can I tolerate it? You know, if the attraction was better, yes. Monsters, Inc. has no business at all in Tomorrowland. First off, Monsters, Inc., the film, does not take place in the future. It takes place in an alternative universe, but it's in real modern time. So it's not even a futuristic sort of concept. I don't understand how they justified that. I mean, is there futuristic looking, like, metallic bottles and stuff? Sure.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
I mean, I'll be honest, I have never really cared about these things. I mean, especially when you think Star Tours is in Disneyland's Tomorrowland, and that takes place a long time ago. So that doesn't make sense. So I guess I'm just like, I mean, anything that looks neon-y and futuristic can go, whether it takes place in the future or not.
No, but it's just the placement. I mean, Star Wars is space. You're correct. Long time ago. But the word galaxy is also in there.
Oh.
So, Stitch, again, okay, maybe the presence of that character and that universe, yes, but the attraction itself is awful. And that's one of those, when you think of all the things that go through Imagineering and get, you know, quote-unquote red-lighted, like, you know, they've thought through it, but they're waiting, and they get the no. For that to have gotten through is beyond my imagination. The Monsters, Inc. thing is just more of a question of placement, like we said. It's just like, why does that go in Tomorrowland? Maybe, like I said before, I think if they framed it within the context of, you know, renewable energy discussions and some kind of, you know, self-righteous it, saving the world kind of thing and energy and all this stuff. Maybe that can go in Tomorrowland. But they didn't even do that. It's about laughs and tech. Maybe it's because you text your stuff in and it's really futuristic technology. But then, yeah, it just doesn't go. I don't think it fits there at all.
Okay, I'll give it to you. The next what were they thinking moment. For this one, I'm going to head over to Disney's Hollywood Studios. And it's so funny to me that we're doing this list. I love it. And I don't think any of our regular listeners will be surprised, but we're coming off of an episode where we talked about how magical Magic Kingdom is, and we gushed about it. But I think, you know, we had to balance the scales a little bit. So this week, like I said, I'm going to go over to Hollywood Studios. Rock and Roller Coaster. Listen, we all love this roller coaster. We always have a great time riding it. And I can speak for myself in saying that the facade is actually really cool. Like the giant guitar, the way the car comes off of the strings out into the little plaza there. I think that's great. It has no business at the end of an early 20th century themed Sunset Boulevard. Why is it there?
No clue.
Even the fact that it's music related, I'm like...
No, I'm going to disagree with you that I don't think... No, Sunset Boulevard is not turn of the century themed.
No, I didn't say turn of the century. I just mean like the first half of the 20th century.
Well, it's 1930s, 1940s.
No, I totally disagree. Because the buildings there on Sunset, like the shops, are not themed to early 20th century. They're modern buildings. And the Hollywood Bowl is very modern. The Tower of Terror was built in the 30s, but it's abandoned. So it's modern day.
Yeah, but like the Carthay Circle Theater.
Sunset Boulevard is themed to 30s and 40s Hollywood. Sunset Boulevard. There's swing music playing. There's big band music. Look at the artwork in the Sunset Ranch food market.
I've always pictured it as a modern day feel, looking back with a nostalgic.
No, I mean, think of the streetmosphere. They're all actors from early Hollywood.
Yeah, but the architecture doesn't reflect that. The architecture is very modern.
I don't know how you keep going there. It's Art Deco. It's 30s and 40s.
Yeah, I'm so confused.
Oh, I was more modern than that.
You
personally
lived in Miami. You lived in Art Deco Central. It's all
I know. Well, then it's modern for me.
Okay, well, even if you thought it was modern, can you agree that Rock and Roller Coaster definitely does not blend with all that other stuff?
I always saw that this is a street in Hollywood, okay, and it has a nostalgic tinge to it, but it's in modern day. And so just like in modern day you have old buildings and there's a new building right next to it, and so here's this record company that bought the lot next to this old abandoned Hollywood hotel, and they probably got a good deal on it because people have claimed it's haunted. No. Over there.
And I can tell you exactly what Imagineers were thinking on this one. Imagineers were thinking, this is going to be where the teenagers go because they like Tower of Terror. Let's build the roller coaster right here. This is the teenagers. This is relevant.
Well, Jeremy, as you give all of these explanations, all I can think is that's exactly how this got greenlit because someone in the room said that story. Like, oh, you know, some music company bought an abandoned building next to the hotel. And everybody's saying, yes, that fits. That checks out.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm a modern day.
Made an entrance to this attraction. It's raining super hard. Can you hear that?
Yeah, yes, I can. That's crazy.
It just started. What was I even saying? Oh, to get an entrance into this attraction from over in where the animation courtyard used to be, though, looks completely feasible.
Yeah.
Like, that could have been where you get there, and that courtyard, that would have made sense because you're in a. Maybe that one is the animation courtyard, but now that it's just kind of a hodgepodge of Star Wars, Launch Bay, Little Mermaid, and Disney Junior, I mean, what's a random music studio?
Right. That's not a bad idea. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, Derek, that my persuasiveness would have influenced Imagineers. Just call me a young Joe Rohde.
I do all the time.
I don't know about you, but one time that I always say, what were they thinking, is when I see, experience, hear, or ride Mission Space. I mean, don't get me wrong. Remember that, you know, the golden age is never the present age. And Horizons had run its course. It was done. But in retrospect, one of the most now-loved attractions in Walt Disney World history, very sorely missed, was replaced by, let's just face it, it's a Gravitron. It's a Gravitron from your local amusement park, county fair, the one where you stand up on a spinning wheel, and the G-forces force you against the wall, and inevitably someone throws up, and it travels up the seat rest into the ceiling, only to come sliding back down as the G-forces stop. That's all this is. It's not groundbreaking technology. I get lost in the theme. Are we simply training to go to space? I think that's the thing. Or are we actually going there? You know, because if we're actually going there, it's probably not the best loading procedure to have us... Everybody clearly sees everyone else getting on this little individual little cart tied to the central spoke, and we're all in this little Gravitron together. I mean, the computer-generated cheap animation simulator movie, just everything about this attraction is just so subpar. And I thought it from day one when I wrote it the first time. I was like, this is underwhelming.
I believe that you are in a training thing. It's not actually going to Mars, because the whole thing is like you're planning, they're working on it, and Gary Sinise is like your training captain, and I think even at the end he says something to the effect of, you're ready to go now, or something to that effect.
See, I think that makes more sense with what's going on as far as the loading procedure, and you're in these little capsules and you're clearly, you know, not in a rocket. That makes more sense with that. But then it's like, why would I ride that? Why would I do that? Why not make me, I'm going to space. You know, I want to go to space. I want to, because, you know, in all the stupid little promotions they did about dreams and all that stuff, I dreamed about being an astronaut. I dreamed about going to space, and it shows them on Mission Space. The funnest part of this attraction is when you, maybe two or three of you, are riding with another complete stranger, and you really act like you're taking all the buttons and stuff seriously in the vehicle. That is that's the only fun thing about this.
Yeah, I don't think I've ridden this since 2008. Or no, I guess 2010.
If I'm there with like other people who want to ride it, I'll ride it. Other than that, no.
Yeah. It is a shame that, I mean, Horizons, you say it was time to close it, and that's fine. But it is a shame that Horizons was a dark ride, which is so quintessentially Disney World, and B, it had scenes that depicted the future, which is, you know, hypothetically should be quintessentially future world. And then you replace it with this thrill ride that you, like you said, what do you call it? Gravitron? It's just a Gravitron. And it's focused on the space program, which honestly, by this point, is kind of, I don't want to say dying out, but I mean, it's not what it used to be. You know?
I really do think this attraction could have been better if they didn't do the individual viewing windows and it was one large port and it wasn't so animated looking.
Oh, for sure.
Those two changes could have gone a long way.
It does have a very N64-esque quality to it.
Well, yeah, it's like playing an arcade game. I mean, not to mention the joystick that's in front of you. and then the individual little window, which is clearly the same on everybody's. You can look down and kind of see it. I'll give it this. There is something cool about the feeling of taking off and the G-forces, as simple as that effect is. And how they maximize on the absence of those G-forces by making you feel weightless. I mean, really, it's just coming out of the spin, and because you've been pressed against your seat for 10 seconds, you feel like you're floating, and they probably tilt the cart forward a little bit. So there are some... Those things are okay. They just did not capitalize on the attraction to make it a well-rounded experience.
I agree. But you know what I do kind of love is the facade with the big planets out front. I think that looks really cool, but I would sacrifice that for a new attraction.
Can we talk about the worst part?
It's the mile-long... best part.
The mile-long exit through the... I think we've called it like a church with bad VBS decorations.
That sounds like a Matt comment.
It probably did come from me, while Destiny plays in the background.
Destiny!
Yes, Lord.
I love that song.
Bet you do.
All right, speaking of things that are not a good destiny, that is the Bad Pathways. I don't know. I was looking for a transition. We want to talk about what were they thinking with these bad pathways around the Magic Kingdom, particularly when they open up the walkway behind Main Street.
Oh my gosh.
Just allow you to give... Talk about ruining the magic. I mean, just... Okay.
For the first time in a very long time, we actually walked down one of these the other night, last night, leaving the park. And to Disney's credit, they have built a number of walls and put at least some Main Street-era-looking globe lamps. And there's a lot of hedges and greenery. It felt like they're at least trying to cover up the stuff. And unless you were really looking like behind it, you wouldn't know, you know, there's the backside of Main Street buildings or whatever. And they are actually pumping the background music in there. But what still, if you're leaving the Magic Kingdom, you don't get the final stroll down Main Street USA with the popcorn lights and the I would say the music before. But you're shuffled down this back alley, and it's got to be hurting them because people aren't shopping on the way out, right?
You would
think.
That's
the whole purpose of the Main Street thing.
Mm.
And also, tell me there's nothing better, and I do it every single time, that I'm leaving the Magic Kingdom, and it's been a wonderful day in the parks, and I turn around there at the end, and I look back at the castle.
Yeah.
As I get to the end. You can't do that. You look back, you might see a dumpster.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, even when you get to the end, because the exits are to the left and right of the center street, unless you walk to the center, you know, you turn around and there's the hat shop and the confectionery and or the front of the Emporium.
And what child doesn't love that iconic view?
Yes, yes.
So are you saying they force you to take these back alleys?
Now, here's the thing. They did back when... It was, Main Street Electrical Parade and Wishes and the projection show. I mean, if you were trying to get out of the park, they would have people stationed, like, fireworks this way, park exit this way, to limit the flow on Main Street. And so I don't know if it was like a force. I'm sure you could probably walk your way down Main Street. But I think that means they were probably reserving most of Main Street, sidewalks and the street, for standing viewing for the fireworks.
Well, now that you say that, I have a good tip if you do want to walk down Main Street. Just say you're going to Starbucks. Because now that you say that, I can picture a guy who was pointing towards the exit, and he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm going to Starbucks," because I really was. And he's like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
And let me go that way. So just tell him you're going to Starbucks.
Another part of the Magic Kingdom that has bad walkway is over there by the Mark Twain boat with the really tiny walkway that's maybe two people wide that's between like the rockwork wall and the waterway, I guess you could say. That is a terrible, terrible walkway, and I have been stuck there during a parade before trying to get through when people are trying to go both ways and then they're slow walkers, people trying to stop and watch. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I'm lost.
Okay, so like right where you would load onto the boat.
Mm-hmm.
As you are coming from Liberty Square, if you're going towards Frontierland, there's the normal wide walkway. And then there's an alternative walkway that you can kind of slide down that leads almost to the dock, the boardwalk area there.
Okay, so you're not talking about like that zigzag wooden dock thing.
No, no, no.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
Yes, that is tight.
And it's so tiny and tight. And like I said, back when they had Main Street Electrical Parade, I got stuck there. And that was the only way you could keep going from Liberty Square to Frontierland, because they wouldn't let you obviously get in the street because the parade was going on. And seriously, I thought a fight was going to break out because everybody was trying to get through at the same time. And of course, it was bottlenecking. And then you have that one Yahoo that decides that now's a good time to take a picture of the parade as it passes by, and people start yelling at him.
It's people that think that we're not all trying to go somewhere.
True.
You know, it's The other night, it was any of those narrow pathways are like this. I was telling one of the ones I mentioned was, if you're leaving Liberty Square, let's say you're at Liberty Square, you're leaving Liberty Square heading to Main Street, so that bridge, but you're not going to go over the bridge. You're at, you know, Sleepy Hollow's on the left and the Christmas shop and the other places on the right. There's a little small pathway that goes up the left in front of Sleepy Hollow that actually will take you all the way around the back side of the castle on the left side by the Cinderella Fountain, you know. And then if you turned right, you would do the same thing kind of by Adventureland, back where Princess Naveen and Tiana used to meet or still meet. But anyway, we were trying to get to Fantasyland because the projection show was happening. Main Street was crazy. We couldn't get through the hub, so we turned around and we were trying to take that little shortcut back through that little alleyway. Oh, and there were so many people. Mm-hmm. And this isn't so much Disney's fault, I guess, as just like, when you're in the moment, you're thinking, why is this pathway so small? It's literally and maybe wide enough for two strollers to barely fit adjacent to each other. And so you have one lane of traffic coming on your left, one on the right. And then you have the dipty-doos that don't know how to just stay in the right lane. And they think their whole family needs to walk 3x3 down this thing. And then you're coming at them, and they're looking at you like, why are you coming this way? The other night, I mean, it was just one person after the other. I was being nice, but I was just one person after the other. It works better if we stay on our side. I just kept saying it like that. And the third person to add insult to injury. It works better if we stay on our side. It works better if we stay on our side. And this one lady rammed her stroller into mine with my child in it. Like, oh, rammed it. Like, I'm coming through. And I looked at her. I said, it works better if we stay on our side. Uh-uh. And she was trying to pass. She was trying to pass the guy in front of her. But it was clogged. It's just one of those things, like, just shut those down at, like, high traffic times.
Yeah, I agree. That pathway is the worst because it really is so narrow. Like, I've gotten caught at Sleepy Hollow many times just standing there waiting for people to come off because I physically cannot fit around all the strollers that are right there. And it's also a great view of the castle. So people stop, and then the person taking the picture gets on the other side of this narrow pathway to take the picture, which means no one can pass, which means everyone on both sides is stopped. And I mean, it's almost enough for me to just find a different way to get to Fantasyland because it's almost always congested.
You know how, like, there's sometimes they shut down the road to do construction if it's like a two lane, and then they have the people with the turning around stop signs?
Yes.
Yeah.
We need two cast members that do that, like a stop, and then they can communicate and then slow, please.
Need to regulate. Like, they just probably need to put one at one area and one at the other side of the little narrow areas and make it one way. Like, depending on which way is better for traffic flow, you know, do some studies on that and determine. And then just make it, like, a one way. Like, people cannot go in that way.
It's not a bad idea. Okay, well, the next What Were They Thinking moment is something that my two co-hosts are very passionate about, and I think it has rubbed off on me. For this one, we're going to head to Adventureland, where back in the good old days, you would see the treehouse, you would see the tiki room and Aloha Isle, where you got your wonderful...
Wonderful.
Yes, there it is. We are rubbing off on you.
Wonderful Dole Whips and the bazaar on your right. And that was it. A nice, beautiful, open space was in the middle of all this. Well, then someone had the bright idea that, you know what, I think there is just enough room for us to add an attraction. And not just any attraction, but something we already have two of in this park, a spinner. So let's put the magic carpets of Aladdin in this place. And that's not to say that this is... I mean, I think it's a bad attraction, but if you enjoy this attraction, that is okay. And if you don't think it's a bad thing to put here, that's okay too. These are just things that we personally ask, what were they thinking?
No. Stop trying to defend this and stop trying to make this okay. It is not okay. It's not Aladdin okay. Does not belong there. And again, I'm not opposed to spinners. I think spinners are great. They occupy the children. I don't think we need three. Now four in the Magic Kingdom, but you know, it could have been suited elsewhere in maybe Hollywood Studios, which didn't have a lot of things for children. But anyways, Yeah, have you seen pictures of Adventureland before they put this thing in? It is so wonderful. There's so much space, and you get such great views of the Tiki Room, you know, from a distance. I long for the day that we can get rid of this. They really cram this.
They're not going to get rid of it.
Mm-mm. Here's the thing, though. Yeah, and not only, I think the most egregious part of this being here is what they have made, the result of it. And that is terrible, terrible traffic. If you were to turn to the left by Jungle Cruise, that little area there is one of those tiny little pathways that was created by this.
Well, and I'm pretty sure there's a food cart there. And I'm like...
Yeah, like a little egg roll thing.
Again, what were they thinking? There's not enough space for this right here.
Yeah. If you go to the right, that's where they shoehorned in the middle of, you know, Polynesia on one side and the Caribbean on the other. They shoehorned a little Arabian bazaar there that's randomly playing the Arabian music. And it just tears up the theme of that section.
It not only is it playing the Arabian music, it's selling stuff, though, that has nothing to do with Agrabah or anything. They're still selling Jungle Cruise related merchandise and all that. I'm like,
it doesn't
this
matter.
Is the most random thing ever.
It's foreign. Like, hey, it's foreign looking. Put it in there. Put it on that thing. Got some stripes on it. Put it in that thing.
Yeah, and half the merchandise is like stuff you can also purchase at Animal Kingdom. It's like the poo with the Tigger that's the tiger, you know. Is that you? It's like, this doesn't belong here. That's not how this works. That's not how this works. Yeah, no, I'm very passionate. And I've had an argument with a loyal listener, Michelle, about she loves this attraction. She thinks it's great for her kids to have.
What's to love about it?
I don't know. But anyway, she thinks Michelle, it fits in there.
It's the camel that spits on guests.
Which is recycled from a parade. It's not even like original to that attraction. Again, shoehorn cram. We got extra crap in the back. Let's put it out.
You know what's sad? Like, I still get spit on by that thing because I'm not paying attention and I'm waiting for someone and I'm like, dang it. Every time.
Well, and it's not even that unique because then they have the appropriately themed tiki looking god things right next to it that also spit at you. So it's not even like it's unique and original and ooh.
We were here first, camel.
Exactly.
If I'm not incorrect, it was what was there before was the sunshine tree, right? Like it was just a little miniature kind of a little planter area, like some seeds and there was a tree.
Okay, with pictures I've seen, there was nothing there. It's just like kind of like a wide open courtyard.
I couldn't tell you. But both are nice.
Well, history will tell you that back in the day, before pirates that opened in 1973, right? Before pirates, that was the end of Adventureland. And there was no pathway through there. So when you turned right, where the magic carpets are now, if you were to have turned right and gone through that, that was the entrance to Frontierland.
Right.
That little under whatever, little...
Bridge thing, yeah.
Yes. I love how we've labeled this category of what were they thinking moments, and it's just messing up icons. And it is messing them up. And the first one, I think, of course, that is more fresher on our mind than maybe the other, is the Sorcerer Mickey hat. And this was, once again, for you people that are just now coming into Disney fandom and you never knew the magic of the Sorcerer's hat, just go look at pictures and you know, tell us what you think. It was a pretty icon. It was nice to look at. Interesting that, you know, below it was just a kind of an ad hoc gift shop, but this was
I believe it was pins.
Yes, it was pins. That's correct. This was constructed and put up for the 100 Years of Magic celebration back in 2001 to celebrate Walt's 100th birthday. And just dead square right in front of the Chinese Theater. I mean, in the middle of what we would call the hub for Hollywood Studios. Wide open space that featured a wide open view of the Chinese Theater down Hollywood Boulevard, completely obstructed by a ginormous sorcerer hat with big
golden ears on it.
I realize this took a long time to build, but I'm just picturing like people at the other end taking pictures of the Great Movie Ride, the Chinese Theater, and then some giant Imagineer just being like, oh, you weren't looking at that, were you? And just like planting this hat right in front of it.
Yeah, but even like even just the layout, like if when they looked at a map, did they not think this is awkward? Like it's like big structure. It's not even like symmetrical or anything. Could they not have thought of something else to do?
I don't know. It's bizarre.
You know, they could have elevated the hat where it looked like it was sitting on top of the theater.
There you go.
Yeah.
Matt loves that idea.
If they just would have like brought back the inflatable Sorcerer Mickey from Fantasy in the Sky for that year. Just blow him up there.
Yeah.
That would have been better than this.
Hollywood Studio has a history of some bad choices, but anyways.
No, I was being serious about that. I like that Mickey.
Yeah, but you can't deny it's kind of tacky.
Well, nowadays it would be. But...
Well, and that the biggest problem with the hat, I mean, that's already problem enough, what we've already said. But I think one of the biggest problems is also the theme of the next one we're going to mention, that it just outstayed its welcome. Like, that thing lasted, what, 13 years, I think?
Yes.
Imagine if the cake for the 25th anniversary had lasted as long as the hat.
And this was the last one. This was the last one, I mean, except for like decorating the castle for various things, like in 2005 for the happiest celebration on earth. This is the last one that's been like, we're going to construct something big and make a complete overhaul of something for a celebration. They haven't done that.
Now, we may have mentioned this at the time, but this feels like the first time I'm realizing this. If it was there 13 years, it was there more than half of the park's lifespan at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the park opened in 89. So if the hat was there in 2001, that's 12 years. Yeah. And then it was there 13 years. Yeah. Wow.
It's crazy. Time is crazy, man. speaking of Sorcerer Mickey being where he doesn't belong, we go over to Spaceship Earth for the Millennium Celebration in 2000. It seems like everybody was having... This was one guy. This was one guy in Imagineering in the late 90s. And he's like, hey, he's fired now. He's gone.
He loves Sorcerer Mickey.
He thought that it was going to be the end of the world around turn of the century.
That's probably what it was. He was and just he was throwing like, out something.
Guys, let's just go out with a bang, man. I got big hats and big wands. Yeah.
We're all high now. This guy, the Millennium Celebration at Epcot, and we talked about it recently, so I don't have to go over it too much, but they had a big glittery 2000 on top of Spaceship Earth, kind of on the left, tilted onto the left corner, if there's a corner.
I know, I'm like, this is a sphere.
Cornerish. If you were to draw a square, it would be on the corner, the left corner. And then coming up from the ground was a giant Mickey hand with the red robe was kind of drooping on there like the Sorcerer Mickey robe, and he had a big wand. And like I said on that last episode, this was nice for the Millennium Celebration, but once it was done and they changed it to Epcot, I think everybody's like, oh, it's going to stay. Okay.
Like, this is
and
a thing.
And it was there. I mean, and you, shorter than the Sorcerer Mickey hat, but this was still there for 6 or 7 years.
Oof. Yep.
It was still there our first trip.
It certainly was.
I guess if it went up in 1999, then it was there for 8 years total. But post its usefulness, it was there 6 or 7 years. It's just one of the... And this wasn't obstructive in the way that it was in front of, but it just... You know, what was Spaceship Earth during that time? Like, it wasn't a sphere. It wasn't Earth. It was like a... Why was Mickey coming up the side of it with a wand? Like, what was this?
And as someone noted... Mickey never uses a wand in Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Either. I noted that based on someone else noting that.
Well, speaking of things we love, what were they thinking when they put in the African outpost in World Showcase? First off, it's just cheaply made. Like, it's just cheap overall. It's terrible. Second, if I was visiting from Africa and that was the representation that my country got, or my continent.
No, it's not even that. Yeah, your continent. Yeah.
I would be super ticked. I would be so upset. I'd be like, we are more than just bamboo structures and Coca-Cola. Like, what in the world?
Yeah. Well, not only that, it's not even
it's not even like an official representation of the country or the continent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a pavilion. It's just a little pit stop between China and Germany.
And it's imagined up by some probably white middle America, you know, whatever. That's their stereotypical concept of what.
Yeah. Put some grass on that roof. Put some grass on that roof, and put some drums out there. The bankers make noise.
That's Africa, yes.
Yeah.
Make sure the cast member's black, and then it's really Africa. You know, it's like.
Well, and I mean, they have given up with the African outposts. They sell hot dogs and chips. Like, you couldn't at least sell some sort of African cuisine, like couscous or something. Like,
see some babodi over there.
Yeah, that stuff's good.
I think it works because it's representing imperialism into Africa, so it really does.
At the very best, that's what it represents. Yeah, your sunglasses, spray cool bottles, hot dogs, and Coca-Cola. That's it.
The only thing I wish they would sell that would just make it even better is, you know, like when the like a sports team loses like a Super Bowl or whatever, like they always make up the championship shirts for the losers and then they ship them to Africa. They should sell last year's Super Bowl loser championship shirts there.
Yes. Could do that, or just random t-shirts from the Goodwill from like little mission trips that go and just leave their random shirts there. Like, here's my Ace Hardware t-shirt. You can have this.
Yes, here's my little Christian t-shirt with a witty catchphrase, you know, Burger King have it his way or something, you know, whatever.
Yes.
One of my favorite tweets during the opening ceremonies was something like, when does the African outpost come? As like all the countries are marching in.
Right.
What's the quote from Lion King where he's like, all of this is our kingdom, but that shadowy area over there, that's what the African outpost is. Like, it's the shadowy area that you're not supposed to pay attention to.
And again, let's just go back to the, let's not get just brush over the fact that Africa is a vast continent that is huge, that has cultures of all different types, that it's not all, you know, safari and what you know. I think it needs to be a little more specific, because I mean, I think anybody from Africa would tell you that probably most likely the way they act in culture and speak in South Africa is very different than in Kenya, which is very different in Morocco, which is very different in, you know, Libya.
Then which Africa are you going to represent? I mean, North Africa is, this is turning into like a civics lesson, but North Africa, you know, it's very Middle Eastern, Mediterranean feeling. You know, Egypt, Morocco, Algeria, Libya, all those places. It's just it is a vast place to try to represent. So, yeah, how do you pick?
Well, then just cut it. Just don't do it.
Exactly. Yeah, don't try.
Yeah. Oh, my turn. Gosh, this is one that Matt is so passionate about. In fact, Matt, you are so passionate about this one. Why don't you introduce it?
Can I address this to Joe Rohde? Dear Joe Rohde, just what is Chester and Hester's Dinorama? Can I just share with you something? A well-themed parking lot is a parking lot.
Yep.
I think it was one of you that was trying to tell me about his Instagram lectures on the cracks in the asphalt. I'm like, look, perfectly theming an area of a Disney theme park to a roadside county fair is inappropriate at best. It borders on blasphemous. It looks tacky. It's like, what were you thinking? I mean, that is the question every time I go over there. Like, what is this? Why is this here? It's not even charming. I know it's charming to you, too. It's not charming to me. It's trashy.
I will say, I've only recently started coming around to your way of thinking.
Oh, wow.
And it's because of what you just said. Sure, it's great theming. And I think it's fun and kitschy, like it's supposed to be, and tacky. But when you look at every other land in Animal Kingdom, Dinorama sticks out like a sore thumb. And I'll tell you, one of the things that annoys me that's kind of minor, but it really starts to get on my nerves, you can hear the of the primeval whirl, like, ascent. You hear that from Asia. you hear it from...
You can hear the sound effects, too, like on the music loop.
Oh, can you? I just hear the rat-tat-tat from, like, everywhere I'm looking at the Tree of Life, I hear that rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Like I said, a well-themed, I should say an accurately, because Joe Rohde's big on accuracy and immersiveness, and he does so well. I mean, Everest, and I'm sure Pandora will be beautiful, but when you accurately theme an area to a roadside thing, accurately theming a land to a dirty roadside fair gets you a dirty roadside fair. And that's just not something you want to accurately portray.
Right,
Disney theme park.
It's like, look at that dumpster. You think it's real, but we built that dumpster and put fake trash in it. Right, but it's a dumpster.
I always think of the criticisms of Walt and Disneyland, how he did not want Midway games in his park. He did not want the Barkers and the games to make money. And people thought, well, you're not going to be able to make money if you don't do that. And of course, he proved them wrong. But to turn around and then put Midway games with Barkers in a Disney theme park just seems like sacrilege to me.
Yeah, I grew up in a family where we did not play those games. If we went to Six Flags, it was like, I'm not giving you $5 to play that. That is a waste of money. And that was the mindset I always grew up with. And so that is one of the things that really, really bothers me about that, is that not only is it games, but they really do charge you what any other cheap park would charge you to play those games that you're never going to win.
And I think we found our next t-shirt. I want it to say, a well-themed parking lot is still a parking lot. And then Dino-Rama. I like that.
They really did pave paradise to put up a parking lot. Man.
I mean, that's right. The attractions in there, too. I mean, Primeval World, it's fun for what it is. But what it is a wild mouse roller coaster that you can ride at any regular old amusement park. It's not indoors. I wouldn't even call it well-themed. It's just kind of cheap. And then there's the typical spinner, the Triceratops spin, which, as I've asked before, why are they flying? All these things are not thought through.
I'm starting to agree with you.
Praise the Lord.
Well, since I graciously gave you that one, I'll go ahead and introduce the next one. Okay, so this is one that Jeremy and I did not get to experience in its original form. But it's something that the more I hear about it, the more upset I get. Journey into Your Imagination was a very brief iteration of the attraction we now know as Journey into Imagination with Figment. So for years they had this, I guess charming, I really don't know. But they had this attraction.
That's the word for it.
Yeah, with charming characters, Dreamfinder and Figment. Dreamfinder was the male kind of mentor, and Figment was his lovable but mischievous sidekick mentee, I guess. And of course, we still know Figment now. But when they introduced Journey into Your Imagination, they kind of redid the attraction, overhauled it, and made it, I guess, better for the 21st century. They removed both characters, which I would say were the biggest draws of the attraction at the time. And like I said, it lasted for a very brief time because I think it was universally hated. And then when they redid it like a year and a half, 2 years later, they at least brought back Figment. But I don't think the attraction has ever quite been the same.
It's just too little, too late.
And I think we all would acknowledge the fact that attractions do need to evolve. They need to become better with time and age. But literally, I don't understand the concept of, let's take the only thing that people really are attached to about this attraction and remove them entirely. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, if anything, it should be the complete opposite. But somebody was on the crack pipe that
day. If you've ridden the current iteration, Journey to Imagination with Figment, it was mostly the same. The only differences are in every station now where Figment kind of pops up and does something mischievous. That didn't happen in this version. Like in the sound area at the very beginning, it just went dark and you heard the train going over. You kind of felt like it was right above you, and Eric Idle was your primary narrator. And the sight thing, it was just kind of the words doing weird things. The smell thing was always the skunk, but it didn't have figment. It's just that kind of thing. The section now where you go into the Figment's upside down house, mm-hmm. you know, at the end, it was just an upside down house. It was just like, what if we turn things upside down? And you're like, oh, cool. You know, toilet. And the ending was just this explosion, but it didn't open up into anything. It was just that you blew the meter, you know, and so there was not this big reveal of this big thing. It was just that was it. Like, great. Yeah.
That sounds awful. That sounds...
It really does.
Miserable. And then the fact that they tried to cram Figment in, I appreciate the effort. But as you mentioned, it's too little, too late.
And they brought the song back.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And it's funny, now they have so much recognized the error of their ways that Figment is basically the mascot of Epcot. When you look at this Festival of the Art stuff, there's a Figment topiary. There are the Figment magnets that you win for doing the Figment scavenger hunt. There's a Figment, some sort of Figment food item. Like, he is everywhere.
It's just taken Disney this long to realize that they can market and theme things using old school retro characters and themes to appeal to the fanboys while still making money off of people who have no clue what that is.
That's true.
You know, they can make everybody happy. They're just now getting this.
What child would not love an adorable purple dragon stuffed plush, you know?
Or a middle-aged man with a red beard and a mustache wearing a top hat.
That, oh, yeah. I think you're describing someone who also bought the plush. A middle-aged, red-haired man. It was the top hat that gave it away, though.
That plays with a puppet and wants you to come see him. You know, just come over here.
So, are we hedging bets? I'm willing to bet that with this Epcot revamp, either it's going to be a complete overhaul of Future World, or what we're going to get is one new revamp or whatever, new attraction, and the return of the original attraction and journey.
No, I don't get that.
I would not put it past them.
I like, therefore, I want to believe the rumors and the thoughts that Dreamfinder and Figment will find a new kind of role in Tomorrowland, and Future World will go kind of a different direction.
That would be cool. And let us not forget, too, the success of the Figment comics that was out just a year or so ago. Yeah. And people seem to like those.
Yep.
And number 10 on our list. What they were thinking when they came up with this concept is beyond my recognition. And I'm a very empathetic person who tries to see things from different people's perspectives a lot. But this is just idiotic. And that was when they took the charming, lovable, amazing attraction known as the Enchanted Tiki Room and prostituted it out to Iago and Zazu and turned it into Enchanted Tiki Room under new management.
Mm. Not only did they mess with a Walt classic, which you can do, like it's been done in okay ways, but they made fun of the original Walt classic within this attraction.
That was the worst. Like, yes, the Tiki Birds are not hip. That is not their role.
Yeah, exactly. But the dialogue straight up poked fun at the original attraction, which people loved. I mean, obviously not everyone, because they felt the need to change it. But it definitely had a fan base. And it took seeing under new management for me to realize how wonderful Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room is. Because I remember that was our first impression of Tiki Room.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, I'm glad I did it, but I never in my life want to do that again.
It's just a failed attempt. It wasn't even like it was relevant. I mean, they tried to, you know, the whole idea was the Tiki Birds are not hip and their show was a bore, so we're going to make this hip and include modern music like rap and R&B and rock and roll and stuff. But it was like the Tiki Gods singing in the still of the night. Was that what they were singing?
Yeah. Boys to Men.
It's like, what? What is this? Yeah. It was a travesty.
It really was. And I'm glad. And do you remember why they went back to the original show? Anybody?
It caught on fire.
It caught on fire, and which I think, you know, it falls into the act of God. So thank you, Lord, for
act of the Tiki gods.
Ooh. Oh, nice.
The gods have been angered by this terrible show.
I just realized a common connection among three of our 10. Incorporating movies into the parks. You've got Under New Management with Iago and Zazu. You've got Stitch and Monsters, Inc. in Tomorrowland. And you've got the Magic Carpets of Aladdin in an area that used to be original attractions.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's incorporating films where they don't need to be. It's when you try to shoehorn them in is when the problem is. Because when they work, they work.
Exactly.
But when they don't, they are big, big misses. And Under New Management was, without a doubt, the biggest miss I think Imagineering has ever done when it comes to trying to revamp an attraction.
Can I say the worst part was, I think, and I really mean this, the worst part was the terrible version of the pre-show during Under New Management. When they were like, where it was like two, it was Zazu and Iago's managers. Do you remember this?
Don Rickles and Phil Hartman.
Yeah, they were wearing like gold chains and stuff. Like they were like trashy, like mafia men or something. Like, what? That's not Clyde and Claude. who is that?
The only thing I could think of that could be worse than this is when they come out with Brother Bear Jamboree over in Frontierland.
That'll be fun.
Hopefully even Disney recognizes that movie holds no relevance whatsoever to 2017.
One would think.
Right, one would think. That's true. Well, suffice it to say, we all three love Walt Disney World. But just like anyone, we do have those moments where we gotta ask, what in the world were they thinking?
It's just like we love each other, you know, but on next week's show, we're going to do What Is Wrong With You? And we're just going to go around and clockwise and critique each other.
As soon as Jeremy logs off, you and I are going to say, what was he thinking?
Yeah.
No, of course we're kidding. Listeners, if you have anything on your list that we missed of things that you look at and you say, what were the Imagineers thinking? Let us know, because I'm actually very curious to know what we might have left off of our list. You can always reach us at comments@madchatters.net, or hey, come find us on Twitter @madchatters, Instagram @madchatters, or on our Facebook page. We appreciate you so much. And, you know, we would also really appreciate it if you took just a second to go over to iTunes and leave us a quick review. That is one way you can help out the show. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you, Liberty Square, for showing us that crude medieval torture devices can also be fun family photo stops.
Yep.
So true.
They need a Judas cradle over there. That'd be a good one.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Do you know what a Judas cradle is?
No, I don't really
care. Derek said, yeah. No.
Hey, listen, I love that freaking birthday cake. They can bring that crap back every year for all I care. I love that birthday pink effing cake.
Well, speaking of effing things, no, we can't. The Judas cradle, isn't that because Judas hung himself? Is that what it is?
You would think, but it's a giant, like, pyramid that they would put someone on, and the point of the pyramid would be in their rectum. Oh. And they would then weigh them down little by little until they were completely impaled.
Disembowel.
On this all of the above, whatever happened first, you know it's just a coin toss. Let's see what happens today.
Wow, that's a whole new level to tearing you a new one.